Hey guys, thanks for joining us for this 10th episode in Season 3 of Good Questions with Cameron Dole. Special guests on this episode include singer-songwriter Colton James and actor, screenwriter, filmmaker, and now children's author Richard Duffy Hudson. We'll talk about that new children's book, The Boy Who Came from Heaven. Of course, if you would, please take the time to subscribe, comment, leave some feedback, and of course, share with your friends. Now be sure to follow us on all the socials, and if you have a guest idea, just go ahead and email me at gqwithcam@gmail.com. Now taking a look at some news from around the world, a delivery guy in the Philippines got pulled over on his motorcycle the other day because his passenger didn't have a helmet on. Well, photos of the traffic stop are going viral because of a funny misunderstanding. Now, it turned out it wasn't a woman on the bike with him. It was a mannequin he was in the middle of delivering to someone, and it was sitting behind him and actually looked real. But it wasn't an actual person, so he necessarily wasn't breaking any laws. Now, the delivery service he works for posted about it and confirmed it really did happen. Well, we do want to thank our sponsors for today. Breezy Vapes, located at 1121 North Main in Altus. Of course, they have Wacky Wednesdays where they spin the wheel for savings, and then they have Super Saturdays where disposables, you buy one, get one half off. Of course, they have a great selection of new hardware and the largest selection of disposable flavors in Southwest Oklahoma. Stop in and see them, 1121 North Main, Breezy Vapes, or give them a call at 580-471-VAPE. That's 580-471-8273. We're going to take a quick break, and we'll be back with Colton James right after this on Good Questions with Cameron Dole. We've got singer, songwriter, and man of many talents today to visit with us. Got a new single to talk about, Colton James. And first off, Colton, it's a pleasure to see you, brother.
Pleasure to see you and pleasure to be on your show.
Now tell us, where did, this is one of those first questions when I first meet somebody. I want to find out where music originated for you. I know you said we had a little likeness there, going back into the church, I'm sure, right?
We sure did. I was about 4 years old, doing a Christian and gospel music, and did that for about 9 years. My mother sang in church, and both my grandmothers on my mother's side and my father's side played piano and organ. One was a little bit of a honky-tonk granny. I might have had a little nip here and there, you know, and would just have fun with their families. And on Sunday, you know, cornbread and pinto beans, fried chicken, and good times. Every Sunday, we'd get together all as a family. They called us the James Gang. And on my mother's side, we called her Big Granny, Miss Vivian Smithwick. She was amazing, amazing woman. She played organ and was actually a pretty famous watercolor artist also. So, yeah, I just grew up with all types of music in my family, but Christian and gospel was the first thing that was definitely a big part of my life for several years growing up.
Now, coming from a family that grew you up in church and in music, I mean, whenever you decided to step out on your own, what was the support like? Was there some hesitance in that as well?
Well, I'll tell you, you know, I grew up, you know, Christian gospel music, but country music, you know, riding to the fishing hole with my dad every weekend, listening to a lot of my favorites, you know, Don Williams, George Strait, George Jones, Conway Twitty, on and on and on, you know, it's a lot of those lyrics, you know, me and my dad ride along, I'll be singing along and just having a good time. And so country was definitely, you know, bred in my soul, you know. And for me, it was something that it was a definitely a different transition, especially starting at 17, 18, 19 years old, going out and playing honky tonk bars and nightclubs and parties. And I mean, I've seen it all at a young age. I wasn't even old enough to drink a beer. But, you know, it's, I wouldn't trade it for anything. All the memories, the people, and, you know, doing those things, in my opinion, can definitely help you define who you are as a country artist, because, you know, even though it was tough playing the bars and honky tonks and loading equipment out at 3 o'clock in the morning, the snow and rain and everything else, broke down vans, you know, it makes you appreciate everything you've been through to get to where you're at, you know?
Now, what have you learned most over these last couple of years? I mean, everybody's life completely changed. And as an artist, how much did you have to kind of evolve ever since?
Well, over the last few years, I guess I could say I'm honestly blessed to be working with such a great team that believe in, you know, my lyrics, my music, and who I am as a person, what I want to express in my music. And I think the big thing for me is, and I will say, you know, some people that transition into that, you know, bigger status or going on and further in their career. For me, when combining the music that I write and able to do and help different charities around this country and put a smile on people's face, it's just, I don't look at it as you know, something that's, just disrupted my life and just made it crazy. You know, I take in every moment and I just love to get back with music. So, but there's challenging moments, you know, but it's like any job, you know, there's challenges with any job where you're moving up and progressing. It's just, I think I would say anybody watching this or younger that's wanting to pursue the music dream is just stay focused and stay on a path of who you are and surround yourself with good people.
The new single, I Miss America. Tell us where this one came from for you on a personal level.
Well, this is exactly how it happened. My good friend and my co-writer, Rick Dawson, who lives in Edmond, Oklahoma, right outside Oklahoma City. we're working on some different projects and things that we'll get into in a little bit, but, he sent me a picture, you know, it was, you know, I miss America, I grew up in, or something like that. I can't remember, but it was and I started thinking about it, and I was sitting at my house at the farm, and I kind of jot down, I was like, you know, I miss America, I grew up in, where a handshake was a handshake, and a friend was a real friend, you know, and I'd give anything if I could get that back again. And it just kind of, and I texted it back to him, and he was like, I said, man, I think we need to take this concept and run with it and write a song. And he said, are you serious? And Rick's never written a song, but I tell you, Rick Dawson's a great guy. He's, you know, had some family in Vietnam, and he loves his country. And we got together at his house. I flew out one morning and we started working on the concept and broke out the guitar. We were out on the courtyard on the side of his house. And I tell you, it was within about an hour and a half, 2 hours, we had the whole song written. It was just one of those things that came together, you know, and I remember vividly that morning kind of just, it was a real pretty morning. I like to write early in the morning because get my coffee, get my mind going, right. Just thinking about thoughts, you know. I've always written better when I'm rested, you know, I can think clearly and don't have a lot going on. But I remember kind of just sitting there closing my eyes thinking, what were some of the things I did when I was younger? And I remember my hand over my heart and looking at the flag, the Pledge of Allegiance, saying the morning prayer, and just starting off that day with that feeling that I'm proud to be an American and proud to live in this country. And I remember the classmates, we would all kind of like, it was a feeling of pride, and it was a good feeling for all of us to say the Pledge of Allegiance in the morning to get the day going. I grew up going, I went to a Christian school. I went to a private school. and I loved it. It was, it's called Stonebridge, and some great memories there. And, I remember that's how the song started off. It was just like, we started just going through moments we've lived and started writing the verses, and, you know, it's just, by the time we were done, we had a great song. I felt like we had written a really good, solid song that a lot of people would relate with in today's times. And, you know, to put a smile on people's faces and give them some hope in what lies ahead of us as Americans and in this country. And just, you know, when you hear it, I've had people say, hey, man, I just feel like I'm smiling American. Like, they're happy when they hear this song. And they want to go shake a, you know, friend's hand, or they want to, you know, they just want to crank it up and jam down the road. And it brings that positive feel, like, you know, just feeling proud of getting the day going. So, and the music we put together with it, with a great team in Nashville, we recorded it at Starstruck Studio. Jimmy Nichols, my co-producer, brought some great musicians in, and, you know, It was pretty cool, all the people he brought in. And he brought a guitar player in, Chris Luzinger. He has played on every Garth Brooks number one, everything. You probably know who I'm talking about, but yep, Chris.
I do now, yes.
Put some great riffs in there. And Steve Henson on steel guitar, Jimmy Nichols on keys, Dennis Holt on drums, Luis Espinat on bass, couple other more people's in there working on everything. And Steve Marcentonio, a legend mix engineer, great guy. And we put it all together and just laid it down.
Now, you talked about this being Mark's first write as not being a songwriter. How many times have you put together songs with folks that aren't songwriters, if you will?
Well, that doesn't happen every day. Rick is, we've got some other things we're working on together. We've got a project called Land for Heroes and, for wounded vets and first responders. And, you know, Rick came from the oil and gas industry, and he also is, in the racehorse industry. And, of course, everybody probably has heard the horse Rich Strike.
Yeah.
That won the Kentucky Derby. Well, that's Rick's horse.
Oh, wow. So,
yeah, it couldn't have happened to a better guy. What a Cinderella story there. So, but it's not too often that we put songs together that, you know, that aren't writers, but it has happened a few times in my life. And now, the chemistry was right and the moment was right, and we created something great.
Now, did you know walking away from the write that you had something special, something different than maybe leaving other songwriting sessions?
I did. I felt like I just felt proud of this song. I felt happy about it. I mean, it was probably a couple hours later. I went in there and was sitting at his bar in the house, and I started laying down all the final music, and I did about four or five takes, you know what I mean? Sit there on the phone, just recording it. And finally, just one hit with the feeling. And I sent it to some of my family members and sent it to my wife. And she was like, this is great. So I always like to bounce stuff off her because we've been together so long. And she's like, you know, she'll tell me. She'll tell you quick. Nah, I don't know, you know. But I sent it to some of my family and friends, a couple other writers, like, man, it's a great song. So
that's awesome. Now
I'm very proud. I'm proud to be part of it. You know?
Yeah. Now you talked about working with charitable organizations and doing work on that side as well. And Colton, what does is that the icing on the cake, if you will?
I think anytime you can combine your music and give back with the gift that God gives us in life, is definitely icing on the cake. I've been blessed to work with so many organizations across the country. Freedom Alliance, Komen Foundation, Tennessee Voices for the Children, just so many organizations, you know, Wounded Warrior Project, the USO, all kinds of stuff. But the, you know, to be able to give back, you know, our Land for Heroes organizations is one, it's going to be a 15,000 square foot lodge designed by Anasay Blog Homes, and it was designed by a veteran. But our 10-year plan is to build not one, but four total in key locations of the country. First one's going to be in Southeast Virginia, which we're not too far from Norfolk Naval Base and all the a lot of military bases and Walter Reed Hospital, which is that's kind of how this whole thing started years ago. We started taking veterans hunting and fishing, getting them out, getting them away from the hospital, just having some fun. I started working with the family, trucking for troops, Scott Mallory and his family, and just one thing led to another, and we decided to put together our own initiative, and with the belief and help of a lot of people and sponsors and the ones that see this happen, this thing is coming to life. And to be able to build such a place where these families, our veterans and first responders, can come to just to enjoy the day, the weekend, 3 or 4 days, get away, great food. And I'm going to have a music aspect of it. We're going to have a little stage inside the, I mean, this place is pretty big, 15,000 square feet, but we're excited. We're excited about it. And we're excited about the memories it's going to make and the difference it's going to make in people's lives. So that is the icing on the cake. That is the music award for me. That is the everything. I love it. And, you know, I've always liked to put a smile on people's face, you know, the best I can with the gifts I have. So I'm excited for what the future is going to hold, you know.
That's right. Now I don't know where you're at. If school getting back in session, as does the back to school, does that kind of pump you up as we get close to football season, sports getting back into it? What really keeps you going as you get into the fall months after the summer is over?
Well, the fall months are definitely my favorite time of the year. It's been really hot this summer. I think it's been hot everywhere.
Yes, it has.
I love hunting and fishing. Like I said, now I'm a big time bow hunter. I do. Me and my family, we do a lot of bow hunting. In fact, I bow hunt out that way in Missouri, Texas, and other places. But yeah, the back to school. Of course, I've been out of school for a long time. I don't think I want to ever go back to school.
Nope.
kids don't listen to that. stay in school. Yeah, it's I love this time of year that we're getting ready to come into, and I always have. I've enjoyed the outdoors, and I've always said it's my place where I feel at peace. You know, I do a lot of fishing too, a whole lot of offshore fishing off the coast of the Carolinas, down on the Outer Banks, and Florida, and I've marlin fished all over the world in tournaments. And in fact, I got a song called Oceans East, and it's got a line in there. It's where I find my peace, out on the Oceans East.
That's good.
But I have to send that to you.
Yeah, I'll check that out. Now, again, the new single is I Miss America. And as dates are available, Colton, I know that folks want to keep up with social media, website, and all that stuff. And if folks want to keep up with the latest and the greatest from Colton James, where's the best place to keep up?
Well, at ColtonJames.com, which were our new promotions team and new label. I'm actually with a new record label, Red Sunset Entertainment, now out of Nashville. So they're revamping my website, Colton James USA on Instagram, Colton James USA TikTok, Colton James Official on Facebook, and we can certainly get you all the links, and you can share that too for everything. But the song's available on all platforms, Spotify, Amazon, Apple, everywhere you can search. You can just search I Miss America, Colton James. So it's going pretty good. The followers, monthly followers, have definitely been jumping here lately, so it's pretty exciting.
That's good
and
stuff.
We're getting ready to shoot a music video here real soon for the song. I can't wait to share that with you guys.
All right. Well, we look forward to checking that out. Again, the single, I Miss America, check it out anywhere. You check out your music, find him on all the socials, the website as well. And Colton, hopefully we can catch up again real soon, brother.
That sounds good. I appreciate your time and wish you guys all the best. And thank you for listening to the song. And thank you for taking your time out today to have me on.
Now, if you're in pain, do you think that you'd feel better if someone threw some headphones on your head and had to listen to something? Like, I don't know, maybe Kate Bush is Running Up That Hill. Well, a new study has found that music can help relieve pain, but not in the way you'd expect. It has nothing to do with the music itself, the tempo, the lyrics, or even adrenaline or dopamine. It's the control you have over the playlist. Now, they conducted an experiment where they had people who were suffering from everyday acute pain listen to music. Some were asked for input on what they would like to hear, how complex of a song. Others were not asked. Now, the people who got to choose and felt like they had control over the music reported feeling stronger pain relief than the other group, even though they were all given the same song. So the one group just had the perception that they were in control of the music. The researchers conclude that both music choice and engagement are essential to optimizing the pain-relieving benefits of music. And I guess maybe this explains why everybody wants to be a DJ. Now, a new music says that music can relieve that pain unless it's sung by Yoko Ono, and then it can have the opposite effect. Do want to again say thanks to our sponsors for today's episode. Breezy Vapes, located at 1121 North Main in Altus. Check them out. Wacky Wednesdays and Super Saturdays. Great specials going on. They've got new hardware and the largest selection of disposable flavors in Southwest Oklahoma. Again, that's Breezy Vapes at 1121 North Main in Altus. For more information, give them a call at 580-471-VAPE. That's 580-471-8273. In other news, if you can't study without listening to music, that's actually a good thing. And it doesn't seem to matter what you're listening to. A new survey looked into the connection between music and study habits, and it found that students who play music were more likely to have a GPA above 3.2. Now, there are several reasons why. Some say music is therapeutic, while others say listening helps them focus better and absorb the information more. And 81% of those who listen to music say it just makes studying more fun. Now, 31% of people say they like listening to classical music while studying. It was the most popular genre, possibly because there are usually no lyrics. Now, R&B and country were tied for second most popular genres, followed by rock, oldies, gospel, jazz, hip-hop, pop, and instrumental soundtracks. Now, maybe hip-hop and pop were lower because they're distracting and just aren't chill enough. We're going to take another quick break, and we'll be back with our final guest of the episode. Actor, screenwriter, filmmaker Richard Duffy Hudson will be talking about his new children's book, The Boy Who Came From Heaven, right after this. He's an actor, screenwriter, filmmaker, and now author. We've got Richard Duffy Hudson with us today. And first off, Richard, I don't know if you want me to call you Richard or Duffy, how we want to do that, but it's a privilege to visit with you, sir.
Pleasure to meet you, Mr. Cole. Mr. Dole. Pleasure.
Now, tell us a little bit, the new book, The Boy Who Came From Heaven. Where did inspiration for the writing come, and how excited are you to have this out in front of the readers as well?
First off, thank you so much for inviting me to be here. The book truly inspired, literally, I dreamt it. I dreamt the whole thing. And I woke up, this is a couple of years ago, you know, I woke up and I was like, wow, I just dreamt a children's book. I thought it was pretty wild. And I sat down and started writing it, and it came pretty quick. I think I'd written a big chunk of it in a day. And then over the next couple of several days, I wrote the whole thing. It's all in verse too. And it's about 50 stanzas. And then I just took a little time and just rewrote it and, you know, shaped it. And then I said, wow, I like it. And so I started sharing it with some friends, you know, and I told them it was a children's book, but it really reads like a poem. Mm. And I said, okay, I gotta do something with this. And so I literally sent it off to publishers, you know, I think 250 publishers.
Wow.
Not a peep, really? Not a peep. And the rule of thumb, you know, if you follow the people in the know, and the rule of thumb is to not get your children's book illustrated. They say, just send the story. And if a publisher really likes it, they have illustrators they want to hook you up with, mm-hmm. and they'll take care of all that. So I said, oh, okay. That's why I sent it to 250 publishers and got that many response. Well, I got one rejection letter, which I thought was at least nice. Somebody sent me something,
right?
But no other responses. And so it sits in my computer for, you know, a long time. Mm-hmm. And then I started looking for illustrators, and like we do with a lot of things, I started in my own circle, friends, family, relatives that really knew what they were doing. Mm-hmm. And it's a sad thing. I mean, several very talented people that I knew were like, oh, I would love to do that. I love your book. I would love to illustrate it. I would love to do that. And you go, great. We'll work out some deal. And they go, great. And, I think from each one of them, I got an initial sketch, like thumbnail sketch that took them, you know, just a couple minutes to go, how about this? And you go, oh, I love it. Let's work on that. And then nothing. And I thought, God, nobody really wants to illustrate a book. And then, so it goes back in my drawer, and just about a year and a half ago, maybe 2 years now, I'm having lunch with a friend, and she loved the story. She said, I love that story. You should make a book out of it. I go, yeah, yeah, I know. And she said, you should meet my friend, Haley McLaughlin. And I said, who's your friend, Haley McLaughlin? Well, she works with me. And she is really an illustrator. That's her side gig. And she's really illustrated books. I go, she's really done it. And she's like, wants to do it. Are you kidding me? Somebody that wants to do it. And so I met her, and she loved the book. And we met at a little coffee shop in Studio City. And immediately she's drawing ideas, and I'm like, she really wants to do it. Mm. And I brought my checkbook. I said, okay, I will pay you X amount of dollars if you illustrate the whole book. And she was like, yeah. And I wrote her out a check that day. I said, you got to trust it, you know, and the illustrating process. Wow. I had no idea, but I mean, here's the cover, and you know, there's all these images, right? Mm-hmm. And these images start out as very basic sketches, and then they become more detailed sketches. And then the hair changes or the background changes, and you end up with thousands of images, and you're going, and it's maddening. and there are actually websites that illustrators use to keep all of this organized. First drafts, you know, sketches, colors, all this stuff, right? Because it was mind-boggling. Yeah. And I'm opening up folders and I'm going, wait a minute, is this the picture we're talking about, or is that the picture I'm talking about? What's the difference here? And sometimes it's very subtle. Oh my God, it was maddening. But I finally had to create my own system, because even the website was freaking me out. You know, it was like just too many folders. I'm like, what are we talking about? I mean, almost like editing a movie, you know, where you have different clips and you've got thousands and thousands of clips for even for one scene. Right. I mean, oh, anyway. So I finally got it all together. And I said, I really like this. And I made a PDF and I sent it to 8 publishers. And I got, I think it was 3 offers. Mm. And I was like, wow. And so we went with, I went with Olympic, and their children's section is Bumblebee, I think. Mm-hmm. Well, that's what, yeah, their children's section is Bumblebee. And they've been great, you know, so far they've been great. And so the book went out a couple of months ago, and we're busy promoting it and seeing what can happen with it, you know? So it's been a very interesting ride.
Now, how much has your one man show, how much did that inspire you into children's writing, or did that maybe make you a little bit hesitant to do a book of your own?
The thing about one man shows, and I've got, I think 9, is that they have caused me to take writing seriously as a tool to create something. Mm. So, you know, you read stories about the great writers, and they talk about they write because they have to write. You know, they get up the crack of dawn and they write because they are compelled to write. I'm compelled to work and to create. Right. And so I've been doing one man shows for many years now, and I'll be doing, I'm contracted to do a new one, create a new one here for next year. And I'm not sure exactly what I'm doing, but I write in order to create the product. So I wanted to make a movie. So I wrote a movie. I didn't like the first script, so I wrote another one, but it's because I wanted to make the movie, not because I had this burning need to write things. Does that make sense?
Yeah.
And so, and you know, I wrote this movie and then I went off and raised the money and produced it. And the one man shows are the same. I write them and I do them. And the children's book, when I wrote it, I just knew that it had to be a book, that I had to create the actual book. So the one man shows really showed me how to write to create a product and not writing for writer's sake. So I don't, like, I didn't get up at the crack of dawn this morning, you know, with my latte and just, you know, write poems about anything or write anything. And so that's what writing has been for me. It's been kind of a utilitarian way to get a product created, because I like to create things. And I don't really have an interest in filling journals with my musings, my inner musings. So
now tell us the boy who came from heaven. Tell us kind of the whole premise behind the book and what kind of feedback. How's it like to get the feedback from the readers as well?
This is what's kind of cool about the book. It's got this adorable little boy. And I knew the boy would be adorable, although I didn't know how adorable until Haley drew it, you know. But the whole idea was that he should be cool and cute, so that, you know, you identify with him, because everybody thinks they're cute. let's see. So the premise is it's the eve of the boy's 4th birthday. And it's his 4th birthday because that's the age I was when I had the same thought. And he just, And it begins where he's just thinking about life. And he's sitting alone in his room and he's thinking about life and he's looking out at the stars. And the idea is that his thoughts are going out into space. And then his mom comes in, it's time to go to bed, and she says, "Happy birthday, tomorrow's your birthday." And he's like, "Oh, that's so cool." And he's like, "How old am I going to be tomorrow?" And she says, "You're going to be 4. He's like, "Oh, that's so cool, 4. You know, he doesn't know what that means. And that night he has a dream. And his birthday years, 1, 2, 3, 4, little versions of him come to him in his dream. And they're just little versions of him. And they're numbered 1, 2, 3, and 4. And let's see if I can show that. And here they are. I don't know if you can see that, but these little guys come and they visit him in his dream. And they say, "Well, you're 4 today and happy birthday." And he's like, "Oh, that's cool." And they said, "Next year, you're going to be 5. And next year, you're going to be 6 and 7. And you're going to, one day you'll be 11, you know? And do you remember when you're 4 years old thinking about being 11? Somebody that was 11, they were so grown up. And he's like, "Wow, you're right. One day I'm going to be old. I'm going to get older. That's so cool." And then he flips it and he goes, "But if I'm going older this direction, then wasn't I younger in that direction? And right now I'm just now turning 4, but I used to be 3 and I used to be 2 and I used to be 1. And where was I before I was even born?" Hmm. And that's when it occurs to him, "I was in heaven before I was born." And so when he wakes up that next morning, he has been changed. Everything is about change. Everything is about discovery. Everything is about the revelation of, you know, who you can be, the growth. So he wakes up and he's like, "Wow, wait a minute. If I came from heaven, I should probably be a good kid, you know?" And so he starts doing things around the house that a good kid would do, including writing little love notes to his mom and cleaning the house and just being a good kid, all in all, in general, good kid. And when he goes out and when he's out in the world, he sees people and he just wishes them well. And he notices, once he starts wishing them well, he notices that we're all connected. Mm. That we share this bond of being human and having life and all being from heaven. That's the way he sees it. And he coins this word in his mind, connectricity, that we're all connected. And it's kind of electricity, but it's also kind of connected. And it's spiritual. It's really very spiritual without saying it. Mm. I didn't want to, you know, alienating anybody that thinks that thinks it's religion in this way or that way, but spiritual in a way, although use the word heaven is used. And he just notices that everything is connected. And in the end, he's sitting in his room looking out at the sky like he did at the very beginning. And he's thinking about how we're all connected. And then we go into space and his thoughts go out into space. So here he's thinking and his thoughts are going out into space and his thoughts are these little yellow things that are going out into space. And he's not the only one thinking these thoughts. There's another little boy from another planet thinking the same things. And they both wake up, you know, light years apart to either the same sun or a different sun, but realizing that we're all connected. And so that's really the book. That's what the book is. And that's what the whole thing that it's about. And the response, everybody seems to really, really like it. And that's, I'm really grateful. It was out for a few weeks and my family, my brother bought a bunch of copies and gave them to all his kids and my sister as well. And then one of my sisters, you know, I never heard anything from her. And I'm like, God, everybody's called me up on this book. I mean, I published a book. Jeez. And my older sister, you know, I didn't hear anything from her for weeks and weeks. And then one day she calls me and she's weeping. She says, I just read your book. It's so beautiful. I love it. And that was the sweetest thing. So the response has been pretty good, which has led me to really, seek out like you podcasts and say, and to get the word out and see if it can end up on library shelves and in people's homes and stuff, you know? So we've sold a lot of books, but not a million of them, which is what I would like to do, like sell a million books.
Now for you, the story of the book, this is also something I think that all too often we're always talking about our differences. That's all we hear on the news in everything is how different everybody is. But I love the premise of this book because we're so much alike. I mean, you're talking about the likenesses that we have and what's it going to take for us to focus? And I think that's what it's going to take for us to grow closer together again. I mean, we always talk about, the way the U.S. was back 20 years ago when everybody loved each other and all that. What's it going to take for us to get to that point again?
Yeah, I think inclusion is really what it's all about. And, of course, a big buzzword now, of course, is diversity. And we go, yeah, well, we are all diverse, but we're individually diverse.
Right.
And you and I are put in the same category, but you and I are as different as night and day. And I don't know you, but I know that about you, and that's beautiful. And yet we are so much the same. We have the same needs. We have the same desires. We all want to be loved. We all want family. We all want, to be able to pay the bills, And so there's a lot that ties us together. In these one man shows that I do, and it started out with Edgar Allan Poe many years ago. And I do Einstein. I do George Burns. If you're young enough to remember George Burns,
yes.
I do Audie Murphy. I do Houdini. I do a one-man show where I escape from a straitjacket and I swallow needles. Oh, my God, it's crazy. But people love that. But what people really love is this thing that connects us. That's why they love it. They love Poe because he's out there.
Yeah.
And he writes stories that really shake you up. But you identify with the out there part, or you identify with how much you love scary stories, or you identify with his pain. Mm, yeah. He lost a lot of close friends and family to tuberculosis, and tuberculosis is a long, painful disease. And in the story, in the show, I explain that. I go through that, and people can identify with that. And identifying is the same thing as realizing, is finding those common things, that we were all right together. Same thing with Einstein, same thing with all these characters. People watch these one-man shows and they go, I'm like that, in my own way. Or it reminds them of something. I did George Burns not that long ago. A woman came up to me just bawling. And she had recently lost her father. And she was an older woman, her father was very old. And of course he loved George Burns, and she remembers as a kid, sitting around a TV and watching like those TV specials or watching mm-hmm. him on this show. And she said, we just loved him. And so that brought back those memories again, things that connect us, right. And I think any good creative project should be more about what it is that we share rather than, what it is that keeps us apart. Mm. I think there's an industry that can makes money by, forcing us apart on any level they can. But I'm working on the other end of that.
Now you talked about the one man show and how it touches others. Now, whenever you're delving into a personality, a character or something like that, how surprised are you whenever you learn new things about yourself chasing that character?
That's interesting. So I'll share with you, the Houdini. I didn't want to do Houdini. And I've got magician friends and they love my shows and they're like, dude, you should do Houdini because I'll teach you some magic and, you know, your one-man shows are so great. And I'm like, Houdini. But, you know, Houdini was so driven.
Yeah.
Driven to be successful. And I thought that before I really started reading about him, I thought, God, he's an egomaniac. You know, he's so driven to be the greatest. But then when I floated the idea in some audiences, once I was in front of 400 middle schoolers and I had just done Edgar Allan Poe. And sometimes if I'm in front of an educational group, they'll ask for a Q&A afterwards because the kids want to know or whoever. And so the kids are asking questions and most really smart questions. And then somebody says, well, who else do you do? And I told them and they say, are you going to come up with any new characters? And I started throwing out all these names. Nothing. And then I said, Houdini. And these 400 kids rioted. They were screaming for Houdini. I'm like, wow. So I thought, maybe I should really pursue this. And as I started reading about him, this ego-y idea that I had about him really wasn't that at all. Here was a man who had come from Hungary with his family, immigrated to the U.S. in the late 1800s, and he had like 10 siblings and this family, they were dirt poor. Mm. And he was the bright one, you know, that said, we got to find a way out of this. And so he pursued his passion, truly believing that by pursuing his passion, he can pull his family out of abject poverty. And so all of a sudden, this idea that I had that he was some egomaniac, he was this, he was that, became this very noble sort of thing about this guy who was driven to success and greatness by virtue of the fact that he wanted to pull his family out of poverty. And so I was able to identify with it, not that I'm pulling my family out of poverty, but that I do have my own reasons for wanting to promote myself because I'm the artist. And so if I don't promote myself, then none of this gets out into the world. And so there's this kind of, you kind of juxtapose the artist's desire to be known with why he wants to be known. He wants to be known for his work, not for who he is. Like, I don't care if anybody knows who I am. I want you to know what we did, what we created, you know? So I learn a lot about myself doing all of these, you know? I do Einstein, and I learned just how smart he was and how, God, mind-boggling he makes me feel. So,
what is it about a new character that really makes them a pick, or is there something particular that really tickles your fancy, if you will, about taking on a new character?
The exploration of who they are. Always. What's also interesting is how they, this is going to sound weird, but I think you'll understand how they react to my wanting to do them. Now, all of these characters are long gone past, but there is a dynamic that occurs every time I pick up a biography, if I'm seriously thinking about doing this person. And this dynamic exists in the ether somehow. And it's either an invitation or a closed door. A couple of years back, I was thinking of doing, there are three or four characters I was thinking of doing at the time. So I'm reading biographies on Vince Lombardi, on Groucho Marx, on Charlie Chaplin, and somebody else. And I'm loving this, and I have all these ideas about Vince Lombardi, and I'm loving this, and I have these ideas about Groucho, but I'm having some resistance. and I'm having these ideas about Charlie Chaplin, and I'm reading three biographies at the same time. And this is the way it is. You know, you got half a dozen books, half open, laying all over the place. And the further I get into the Groucho book, the more I'm feeling that Groucho from his grave is saying, no, I don't want you to do a show about me for whatever reason. With Vince Lombardi, exact same thing. I'm like, why am I feeling this? You know, where is this feeling coming from? And I'm doing Edgar Allan Poe. Poe gets booked in a lot of, because he's a literary character, he gets booked in a lot of universities, schools, and libraries.
Right.
Because it's an educational thing. So I'm in a library someplace in Northern California on a Saturday morning. And I get there early. And if you go to libraries, you notice that a lot of libraries have little bookstores where they get rid of all their excess books. And I have some time, so I like to go into those bookstores. So I walked in, and they usually have 300 books. That's about how many books are in this little bookstore. And they'll have a little biography section, and I think maybe between 8 and 10 biographies. That's the typical library's got 8 to 10 biographies in the biography section. They got 80 million copies of some Michael Crichton book, you know, but they've got 10 biographies. And I always go and see, well, what do they got? Because the books are a quarter, you know? So I walk in and I look up on the shelf and there's a book about George Burns. And I go, God, I love George Burns. What an interesting character he is. So I buy the book. 1 week later, on another Saturday, I'm in another city, going to do Edgar Allan Poe at a library. I walk in, I go, oh, I think I'll go to the bookstore. I walk in. They've got 8 biographies. One of them is about George Burns, and it's a different book. And I go, God, that's it. That's funny. I thought George Burns would be an interesting character to do. I buy the book. Scott is my witness. The third week, on a Saturday morning, I'm in another city. I'm still going to do Poe. I walk in, and I go, I'll go into the bookstore. I start walking in. As soon as I get into the door, I stop, and I say, wait a minute. And I look down at the ground. I'm like, I don't even want to see. But if there's a George Burns book on this shelf, that's really a sign. So I walked up. Literally, there were 8 biographies on that shelf. A different George Burns book. A different one. I'm like, okay. And then I said, this is what I want to do. Because I knew how much fun he was.
Right.
And just how much fun he would be to do. And I'll tell you, the road to do him was difficult. You can do Poe, because nobody knows what Poe really sounded like. You know, you gotta ascertain that. You gotta kind of make a guess about certain things, educated guesses about how he behaved. But George, I mean, people grew up, they know how he is, you know, they know what he sounds like, they know how he holds that cigar, you know, they know all this stuff. So that became more of an impersonation rather than, and the music was nearly impossible to find. And he used to joke, he said, I'm taking all my sheet music with me when I die. And honestly, nothing existed. There's a place here in Hollywood, they say they can get any piece of sheet music that was ever written. And I had a list of George Burns songs, and I went down and I gave them to him. And she says, and she even recognized the song. She said, oh, yeah, George Burns used to sing these songs. I go, yeah. She called me up a week later. She goes, one of the songs was written by Marvin Hamlisch, right? The great Marvin Hamlisch. Mm-hmm. She said, I just got off the phone with Marvin Hamlisch's estate, and they don't have a copy of this music.
Wow.
I'm like, so I had to get all of that music created by a brilliant musician who just watched the video and then wrote everything out. So that whole process took a long time, but that was because it was an invitation from George to do it. And I don't know if that answers your question or not.
That's really cool. That's really cool.
Very cool. And Pete, and so all of these characters they teach me something. They teach me something. Because you realize, well, biographies, whenever you read a biography, you learn something, and you learn something about yourself, you know, and I think that's what life is about. And certainly what the creative process is about, is uncovering these things within yourself that hopefully will help someone else. I mean, Shakespeare wrote Hamlet so that we don't have to, you know, go through that. You read it, you go, I learned your lesson. Thank you. I won't have to kill everybody in my family and die myself and some miserable death, you know. Maybe we can all learn.
That's right. Well, again, the book that we've been talking about, The Boy Who Came from Heaven. And Duffy, I want to make sure that our listeners, our viewers, any of that, they know the best place to get a copy of the book and then also to keep up with everything else you've got going on.
The Boy Who Came from Heaven is the most easily purchased through Amazon or Barnes & Noble through their websites. And you would just have to go in there and search either for my name, Duffy Hudson, or for the title of the book, The Boy Who Came from Heaven. There are some books that have similar titles, and I think they're about life after death kind of experiences, mm-hmm, you know. Mm-hmm. But I don't think there's a book that has the exact same title, but this is it. And you'll recognize the blue and the cute boy there. And so that's really where you get it. If you have any interest in me at all, my website's going to be updated, but it's there. And that's simply my name, DuffyHudson.com. And there are videos, some of the shows I do, and there's ways to contact or, you know, if you have any interest in that. But all those shows and all that information is there. And yeah, so there you go.
Well, Duffy, it has been a pleasure and a privilege to visit with you. I look forward to spending a little more time with the book. I know my grandkids would greatly appreciate that one as well. And
great.
Hopefully one of these days I'll get to see you in one of those one person shows as well.
Well, maybe I'll come out to Oklahoma. What part of Oklahoma?
Southwest.
Southwest Oklahoma. Maybe we'll come out there. We'll set up a little tour and I'll send you an invite.
That'll work. Well, Duffy, again, thank you for your time. And I look forward to catching up again real soon.
Thank you, Cameron. My pleasure.
Well, welcome back. And, our final thing before we wrap up, you know, I feel like your answer to this says something about you. Would you rather vacation somewhere new or go to a place you already know that you like? Now, 5,000 Americans were polled, and somewhere new won with 58% of the vote. 22% chose somewhere they'd been, and 20% said they're not sure. Now, Midwesterners were the most likely to say they'd rather go to a place they know and love. 27% chose that option compared to 24% in the Northeast, 20% in the South, and 20% out West. Again, I would like to say thanks for joining us on this 10th episode in Season 3 of Good Questions with Cameron Dole. And if you ever have a comment, question, or anything else you'd like to know, you can hit me up on the socials, Instagram, Twitter, TikTok, and Facebook at The Cameron Dole. And if you have a special guest idea, just email me, gqwithcam@gmail.com. Would like to thank our sponsors for today's episode, Breezy Vapes, located at 1121 North Main in Altus. Give them a call, 580-471-VAPE. That's 580-471-8273. Also like to say good thanks to our good friend, Brandon Allen, who came up with our theme music, and we're going to let him play us out. And hope you guys have a great rest of your weekend.